All right, so let's start up here. So we've been discussing the... So these are very important cases of breach. What happens when one party breaches the agreement? And we're specifically interested in the damages for breach. Obviously, it's important in and of itself, but it's also important because breach is sometimes... Breach and damages for breach is one of the best ways to try to get our finger on the pulse of the nature of these contractual agreements in the first place. And you could already see that in the split in the, amongst the Rishonim about whether all damages are to be calculated in terms of, or conceptualized in terms of Nezikin. So it's like a Nezikin-based calculation. So when you breach an agreement, we're all trying to figure out what kind of loss did you cause him, and he's collecting under a theory of Nezek above a comma, versus the other camp in the Rishonim who think, no, you're collecting under the contract, Kivan shehischad b'malacha, nischayev b'scharo mishalem, and so there's really a different basis for a collection, which separates the Bava Metzia world from the Bava Kama world. So really, two different views about how to conceptualize these damages. Now, as Gabe really pointed out in the last Chabura, I think correctly, even the contract, like there's going to be some finessing that has to be done to make the views totally consistent, right? So even if you're a Ramban person who thinks that the collection after Kinyan Aschalas and Malacha is based in contract, not Nezek, why is it that there's still a full duty to mitigate, and that if the Poel can fully mitigate his damages, then he's not entitled to anything under the contract? Right, so there still is this interesting relationship between having suffered a loss, right, which we'd say maybe something about Nezikin, triggering the liability under contract law. So we have to be sensitive to that and try to figure out why that would be. So we saw last Chabura, as we spoke about this duty to mitigate. You could see, we saw this, first of all, very evidently in the Pesachei Choshen, the first Makoros on the page. Does everybody have access to the Google Doc? And I think in the conference, if you're on the conference, I thought I shared my screen, although I don't know if it has good...
Should I open the conference?
Well?
Open the conference?
If you want to, because if you want to just see the... I could just tell you the page numbers as we go through in the Google Doc.
Can I just quibble out the formulation, a duty to...
Mitigate? Absolutely. To mitigate? Sure.
It's just, especially given the Pesachei Choshen formulation of... Imot yapol at the bekalut
v'shachar. Yeah.
It doesn't sound like there's a firm obligation to find other work, so much as you can't really meaningfully claim damages if, you know, you're not in any worse position now than you were 5 minutes ago.
Right, but notice that's only in most. So you're talking about in Sif Beis.
In Sif Beis, which is Hoshan, yeah.
Notice that's only about there not being even taromes. So you don't even have a case for taromes if you find it pekalos. But if it's very difficult for you to find alternative labor, then you do have taromas.
Okay.
So yeah, that's Sif Gimel. Ena Poel Motzat L'Staka B'Torach Yishal Balvai is taromas.
Okay.
Okay. So that, yeah. Does that answer your?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. So notice, so it's only in the case there's only a claim for damages in the instance where the Poel cannot find alternative malacha. Right. So there has to be some sort of clear loss in order for him to have a claim for compensation. Everybody okay with that? And at least according to this view that comes out of the rush and then taken up by the shach, so whether or not there's taromes will be a function of was there tircha in mitigating your losses. You could see that in the rush, and you can see the shach picks it up in the Shulchan Aruch. Now if you look at Rashi on page 2, as everybody turn to Rashi on the very top of page 2, Yoni, why don't you read Rashi for us? So Rashi on the Gemara of Ein Lam Zel Zel Taromes. Do you have that on top?
Yeah.
It could be that your page is already different since I tinkered with it.
All right, Ein Lam Zel Taromes, the Amar Lahan, Taskir Rosh Mechem Lachirim.
Yeah, so Rashi saying there's only Taromes because Balabais can argue.
Hire yourself out.
Yeah, meaning go mitigate. Right, and that's a legitimate claim. It trumps whatever claim the Poelim have. Now notice, go on. Right, so in the inverse case, where the Poelim are chozer, they could say, Balabais, go mitigate your losses by hiring other workers. Okay, so why is there taromes? Rashi says.
Right,
so Very interesting Rashi. So Rashi says, look, there's taromes because the tircha, etc., right? But why is there no monetary claim right here?
No contract.
No hadvarim ba'alman in here, right? Because there's no agreement. Now, what's kind of peculiar is that there's seemingly an inconsistency between the first phrase in Rashi and the last phrase in Rashi. First phrase seems to say that duty to mitigate, right? So there's no claim. So the reason why there's no damage is because there's a duty to mitigate, teskirat mechem lacherim. But then the last phrase says the reason why there's no claim right for damages is just because dvarim ba'alman inhu, right? There's no agreement. So what do you think of that tension within Rashi? What's the reason why there are no damages? Is it because you could perfectly mitigate, or is it because there's no kinyan?
If I want to be lumpish, I could say, you know, Rashi's trying to, you know, account for both theories. You know, within the Nezikin theory, there was no actual damage. And within the contract theory, there was no contract.
Yeah, so maybe Rashi's saying there are two different principles at work here. But I want to point out, if that's the correct reading, then you walk out with a huge chiddush. Because it would seem to follow, according to Rashi, that if there was more than Dvarim, i.e. there was a Maisa Kinyan, then it sounds like the Poalim would be entitled to compensation even if they could mitigate. Right?
Yeah.
Right? Which would be a big chiddush. It's not a view that we've seen yet in any of the Rishonim. Right? So if you take this Rashi at his word, that Tfiyas Mamon Lekha Deha Dvarim Ba'alman Inhu, with the implication is Yair is reading it, that, well, if there was a Maisa Kinyan, then they'd be entitled to compensation even if they can mitigate, then that'd be a very strong contractual theory. Right? So your entitlement to collect under the contract is totally independent of whether you're kind of suffering a loss. You guys agree with that reading of Yair? It's not the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins. It doesn't seem to be the Ramban's view either, and they're all Kenyan people. They think even after a Kenyan, you're not entitled to compensation if you could perfectly mitigate. Yeah? So you guys, what do you think of the read and Rashi? Yakir, you have thoughts on the... Yakir, you have thoughts on the Yair read?
First time this semester we've had the gym. It's good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But do you have thoughts, Yakir, or what do you think of
it? Probably the best read. I was wondering if maybe we're just totally misreading Dvarim Ba'alman. He's referring to the Tircha of Hazara Achar Kol, and it's only Dvarim Ba'alman. Therefore, there's a
Tircha. Interesting. So he's saying maybe the last clause is going on why there's no Tfiyas Mamon for the Taromes.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think this aesthetically, the cleaner reading is Rashi saying, look, however, there is Taromes because the Tircha. There's no Tfiyas Mamon because...
Yeah, I agree.
As opposed to your read, which would say, there's no Taromes because the Tircha. And why is there only Taromes on the Tircha? Right, that's how you're reading it. Yeah, it's very interesting, Rashi. Is there another way to read it here? I'm not sure.
Being the two reasons the same reason, you know. The reason that it's just Dvarim Ba'alma is because until something happens that can't be retracted, nothing's happened, you know. But once you reach the point where you can no longer, you know, go and find other work, now something's been consummated in a meaningful way.
Meaning you're saying that...
I don't really buy it, but...
I mean, Dvarim Ba'alman is not referring to the contract. It is close to Yakir's read then. Right? So Dvarim Ba'alman is not referring to the relationship between the Poel and the Balabayas. You're saying it just refers to the kind of loss suffered? Is that what you're saying? Meaning the kind of loss you suffered is just like someone retracting their word. Right? So it was like... Is that the idea? Like you're misled.
I think I'm saying the reverse, which is that, you know, Rashi's really making a point about contract theory. I'm saying that the contract isn't binding or isn't...
Even if there was a Kenyan, it's just Dvarim Ba'alma.
Right, even in the mode of a Kenyan, until...
Okay.
Or, you know, yeah. Unless...
So then he's just like a Tosos guy all the way through, meaning
right.
Whatever damage is here, So it's not Dvarim Ba'amanenu, meaning because there was no Ma'aseh Kinyan. He's saying because the nature of the employment relationship is just Dvarim Ba'ama by fiat, by the way the halacha construes it.
Right.
It's interesting. It's an interesting way of looking at it. So he's talking about the nature of Kinyanim, like Po'el and Gufo Kanoi kind of thing, rather than empirically, was there a Kinyan in this case? That's what you want, an alternative reading.
I like stretch read.
What?
Yeah, I'm a lot of
stretch read. Stretch read. You're saying that's not... You think you like the reading, the cleaner reading, of because there was not yet a Ma'aseh Kinyan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, I think that's the way the Ramban actually... If you zip ahead for a second to the Ramban, because the Ramban actually has an interesting read. He tries to read his view into Rashi. So look at the Ramban on page 7 in the most updated source sheet. So on page 7, you see there's a paragraph that starts with Rashi Zal Kasav. You guys see that?
Yeah.
So he says Rashi Zal Kasav Bereisha. Ein lehem zel zel taromas. Tamu haskira atzmechem lacher mi taromas iga shi yitzichem lachzor hachar sochem v'tviyas nama lako dehat dvarim ba'al maninu. Pirish li pirusho. Yeah, somebody read for us. Ben, go for the Ramban.
Pirish li pirusho. Heskira atzmechem intinsu. Shalom yitchayavti lachem de dvarim ba'al maninu. Kevan shalom yitzchil v'malacha no yitchayavu zel zel. Ha'im
Yes, Sudan Ramban definitely reads Rashi as accepting his chiluk that kodem aschalas hamalacha there's not yet a kinyan, but after aschalas hamalacha there is a kinyan. Problem is, the Ramban doesn't draw the inference that it follows from Rashi that there's no duty to mitigate after ma'aseh kinyan. Like that would seem to follow from Rashi's position. I mean, the poelim are entitled to collect the full value of the contract, even if they could find alternative employment elsewhere. See that? So the Ramban, we'll see that Ramban himself disagrees with that inference, but he wants to read Rashi at least as buying in that into that important distinction between Kinyan versus no Kinyan. Okay. So that's Rashi. Let's just look also at the formulation in the Me'iri. So turn back to page 2. Turn back to page 2 for a second. Miri and I involve in base says Dvar Melu b'Shalom Matu Malacha Shekmosa Laso Shenimtzu Chazarasa Davar HaAved Etzlam. Notice how the Miri characterizes the Poelim's right to collect as a Davar HaAved. Okay, we'll have to figure out what that means. M'cholshu Davar HaAved Alav L'Shalim. Anytime the Poelim are going to suffer a loss, the Balabayas' duty to pay. Aval imatzu malacha kala haymana osha kemosa lasos amalam balabayis tzuva asu ein kan el taromas. Now I think that Meiri and Ayin Vav and Beis is going on.
Is he saying that the inability to have work is the equivalent of Dever Aved, and then that they are the same, or just that they have the equivalent dinim?
Yeah.
It sounds like in that paragraph he's talking about the dinim being similar. That's like also where the limud is from, like the source for where we know about this.
Yeah,
this din comes from davar aved cases.
I'm not sure. He does say that if lo matzu malacha shekimosa lasos, then chazaroso is a davar aved atzlam. It sounds like it's conceptualized as like a loss that they're suffering. So not just that we export dinim, but that it in fact is a case of davar aved. So it sounds, at least just on this Meiri view, the basis for liability for breaching a contract is Davar HaAved. Now, what language does that speak in? Davar HaAved? I would imagine. What language?
Yeah. First Rashi meeting.
Well, hold up. We're stepping out of Rashi for a second. Even just
the view that the non-contract
is. Exactly. Nizikin. Right? I think Davar HaAved seems to be, at least on the face of it. Yakir, the light bothering you? That the basis for liability here has to do with Davar HaAved. But notice the symmetry, right? If the basis for liability is Davar HaAved, then if you could mitigate by finding alternative work, then there is no Davar HaAved. Right, so we're interested in calculating the basis of liability for Meir is Dabar Aved. Obviously, if you can mitigate, then there is no Dabar Aved to collect in. And that's exactly what he's saying here in this passage on the Meir.
It doesn't seem like the Poland have a responsibility to look for El Salvador. If they happen to find work, then it's different.
Well, notice he says, Amar Lahem Balabayas Tzu'uva Asu. So it sounds like the Balabayas has the upper hand to say, you're not entitled to compensation, right, if you could find alternative employment right now.
Before that, it's imatsu malacha kalav nashkulasa. If they found work, then the Balabaya can say, go leave and work.
Yeah, I think it means if it's available. Okay. Right, so if it's available and the Balabaya says, go mitigate, then they have a duty to. Right? Okay. Yeah. Good. Notice again the Gemara itself on Ayin Vav Mem Beis, discussing the Balabayas' side. So remember, the category of Davar HaAvod comes from where? And the Gemara Ayin Vav Mem Beis, from the Chazara de Poalim, a case where Balabayas hires workers. The Poalim breach by backing out. And he has like some Davar HaAvod work for them. So the Gemara seems to characterize Davar HaAvod. He has like pishtun. He has flax that has to be gathered right away or else it's going to spoil. And so the Gemara says that a Balabayas can recover damages for the poel backing out. And notice what the Gemara says, Bamedvar Mamurim is the last phrase in the quote that I have in the Gemara 9 Vav Mem Beis here on page 2. Bizman she'ein sham poelim liskar, val yesham poelim liskar, v'amar tseh uschar me'elu, ein lo alein el taromes. Right, so the same thing Chu holds on the Balabayas side. He has a duty to mitigate if the poelim back out. And that's what the Meiri is drawing from. Okay. Good. Now, we closed last time with this machlokas brought down at the Shulchan Aruch and Shin Lamed Gimel Beis about what happens if the Poalim could find alternative malacha, but the alternative malacha is more difficult for them. They'll be compensated at a higher rate, but it's more difficult than the malacha they would have done for the Balabayas. So who has the right of way in that dispute? And what do you think will determine the answer to that question? So what do you guys think? Well, let's just read the Shulchan Aruch inside first. Yair, you want to read the Shulchan Aruch for us?
Just the underlying portion we're speaking about?
Well, why don't you just read us through the whole Shulchan Aruch for a second?
Sure. V'medvar mamurim she'em lahem alav elataromet b'shelo holchu davcha b'shelo hayu l'cholem l'haskir atzmam emesh kishescharam balabayet zeh alim hayu niskarim emesh v'achshav einem mishcharam klal harei zeh kedavar ha'avud lahem v'nudin lahem scharam kepoel bata.
Okay, so yeah. So we'll talk about the first part in a second, the counterfactual test that they would have been able to find employment elsewhere. But notice Shulchan Aruch does say that there's only liability if Achshav Einam Niskarim Klal. Right? So Shulchan Aruch is paskening that if they can mitigate, then there's no damages. Right? Yeah, Hareza Kedavra Avot Shalahem. So notice he's also working with the Shulchan Aruch's paradigm is Davar HaAvod. We still don't know what that is. But like the Meiri, the basis for liability is this idea of Davar HaAvod HaPoalim. Okay? And I think, V'im Niskarim B'Pachos.
V'im Niskarim B'Pachos, Mishalim HaPachas.
HaPachas, yeah. That's very intuitive, right? So if they're going to mitigate 50% of their losses, they're only entitled to be compensated for the 50% difference. Okay, good. Good. Now, so that's all the case of no contract. That's pre-Kinyan, right? Kod maschalas
amalacha. I'm not sure how intuitive it is, but...
Which one do you think is not intuitive?
The paying the difference.
You think he shouldn't pay the difference?
I don't know. Let's say I was going to pay, a higher-paying job that simply wasn't available otherwise. So you took my job, but you haven't lost anything.
Well, here
you
weren't entitled
to a high-paying job before.
Yeah, anybody want to respond to Yair's point?
I don't understand that.
My question is, why are the Poland entitled to the wages I would pay them? They're entitled to the damage, whatever damage I cause by them not taking another job. So if they take the best other job available, I had advantage them.
But no, but the Shulchan Aruch's thinking that they would have been
able to get paid
right.
at
that's,
the level I was.
That's the first clause, right? Remember, Hayu Niskarim Emesh. right? That's the they would have been able to find the similar employment elsewhere. Right. So that is a necessary condition for their being able to collect. So there is damage.
Y'all think it's an argument to make again for what you're saying?
Well,
y'all think it's an argument to make it just for means even what year is objecting to, and then even if this employer, let's say, he was market rate is $100 an hour, and this guy was offering $120 an hour, then he still is liable to pay.
120?
The 120 rate right. difference.
That's only if they would have been able to find employment for 120 yesterday.
I don't think there's any argument to say that you'd be high for that higher
amount. Not in this, right, not in this pre-Kenyan Ezekian view. I think the Ramban is very clear about that. At least that's the Ramban's position, and I think that's the Shulchan Aruch is getting at, Im Hayuniskar Mamesh. Not just the mere fact that they could have been hired, but I think that also is the quantity of how much they would have been paid for doing it.
In terms of like reliance damages, like something like those.
Well, the point is the reliance damages, the damages for reliance are only the actual damages for reliance.
Yeah,
so if they didn't lose a better or equal alternative employment by relying on him.
No, but they say they bought a house, you think it was extra $20.
Right, so I think that's going to be a different issue. That's going to be a different issue. Mm-hmm. That kind of reliance damages. Nothing we've seen yet takes a stand on that.
Okay.
Right? That's a really important sugya that I hope Rishonim address. I haven't seen anybody address that kind of discussion yet. But I wonder if any of the principles that we'll see will be straight away applicable to that kind of a scenario. Does everybody see what Yoni's asking about? Like what happens if on the assumption that the Baal Bayis is going to pay them $120 an hour, they spent extra money, right, relying on that. So would that entitle them to some sort of compensation? Yeah. So I don't have an answer yet. Okay, now what happens in the Kenyan case with the Shulchan Aruch? Vim halchu.
Vim halchu. V'dachkash halchu atzman v'halo shlucham. Av v'pi shalo ayu motziim l'haskir atzman emesh no delem nischarim kapol bata.
Yeah.
V'hu she'achshav einam nischarim klal aval im motziim mishe yaskirim v'schiruto en lahem ela tarola.
Yeah. So Shulchan Aruch says that if there was a Kenyan, so he's clearly following the Ramban view, and they can't mitigate, right? So you see that the Shulchan Aruch clearly thinks that if you can mitigate after a Kenyan, you're not entitled to anything, i.e. contra to the implication of that Rashi, right? Because the implication from Rashi is that if there was a Kenyan, then maybe there should be damages because it's more than Dvar Ba'alma. Shulchan Aruch says no, right? Even after Kenyan, you pay them their schar. V'hu she'achshav ein haniskarim klal ba'im motzim mishe yaskirim b'schiros b'schiruso ein lahem ela taromes. But after Kenyan, if you could fully mitigate, you're not entitled to any compensation, says the Shulchan Aruch, and that comes out of the Ramban. Maybe Rashi would disagree. Can I see that?
Yeah.
Okay. V'yesh. Does anybody want to offer like just a regal achas answer to why that might be, like why you should be entitled to compensation, why you should not be entitled to compensation based off your ability to find alternative work, even within the contract theory? Yoni,
I mean, it's hard to like really flesh it out. I'm not a lot in trouble, but I think the argument would be that inherent within your contract, there's kind of like the responsibility to work or find work.
Yeah, I think that's right. Meaning you'll say it's just it's an implied condition within the terms of the agreement.
Yeah, the contract kind of extends to your, I mean, the contract is for you to work. So part of that work is for you to find, to now be find alternative work.
That's right. So it's just an interpretation of the reasonable terms here rather than our saying that. So it's when we interpret the agreement, you're entitled to be compensated for the work that you're doing, right? So implied in that is that if I can't provide the work, then you'll look around elsewhere to try to like mitigate your losses. That's like the most rational way of understanding the agreement between the parties, right? The agreement here wasn't to give a windfall in case one party backs out. I think that might be a good way of addressing Gabe's point from last week. That's why there's duty to mitigate even on the contract theory. Maybe Rashi disagrees with that, right? Maybe Rashi is going to say that we can't read that condition in unless it's explicit there. Eitan, you were going to say something?
I was just going to say that if you look at a contract as not as an agreement between two parties that, oh, you're going to work specifically for me, but that this is a contract for the worker to work, and that's like the emphasis of what a contract
yeah.
is, then meaning
you could get the same duty to mitigate to work for working by somebody else.
Exactly.
That's similar to what Yoni's saying.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. 100%. Okay, you had a point, or?
I'm not sure if it's any different. Maybe the Balabai is considered to have satisfied his chiyuv to pay.
Yeah, by finding them
alternative.
So what's the difference in whether he says, okay, don't work for me, work for this guy, or saying, like, look around and work for whoever you could work for.
Right.
Yeah, so it's almost like a subrogation almost. It's like the, you're still working for the Balabai, but under a different, like under a subcontractor kind of idea. Right, that's the, I am giving you work. I'm giving you work by designating you to go do that guy's work.
So what happens if the contract has
an... interesting nachkamina be if he says, it's just you have to say, like, say, Hasker Atzmachem Leilu. Right? Is, who does the initiative have to come from? Is it automatic? Or might you think that the Balabais actually designate them and say, look, I want you to satisfy your employment agreement through working with these other people? Notice Rashi seemed to say that the Balabais does have to say that. Let's see, Rashi. Rashi's formulation on the Gemara is, Einam Zel Zal Taromas, De Amar Lahem Taskiru Asmechem La'Cheirem. Right? I guess, De Omer Lahem. Which you might think has to be cashed out in terms of an actual command. In the Shulchan Aruch, by the way, in the Gemara also in Ayin Vav Mem Beis, that last phrase in the Gemara said, in the inverse case, where the Polim are chozer and the Balabais has a duty to mitigate, Alo Yesham Polim Liskar, the Amar Tsei Uschor Me'elu, right, and the Poel says, go hire these other people, Ein Olav Elein El Taromas. But once it gets, so both in that phrase in the Gemara and in the Rishonim, it sounds like there has to be this command to mitigate. Once you get into the Shulchan Aruch, I think that command is gone, right? Just assume that it's an automatic duty, right? Hushachshav einon miskarim klal. So maybe that might be an interesting nafkamina.
I have a hard time believing that, you know, the Poelim are fulfilling their contract by providing other people to work. They're not providing other people to work. Other people exist. They have, you know, a Balabai, as I understand, has some kind of right to the work
labor
of the Poel, and he can transfer it. That's conceivable to me. But the Poelim should have the right to transfer other Poelim's work, sort of haphazardly. It seems a little...
At the Poelim have right to...
Right, that I'm a Poel, I'm going to back out.
You're
working
for
me. I'm fulfilling
me.
My term of working for you by having these Poelim work for you. I'm doing nothing at all.
You're saying in the inverse case.
Right. It's hard for me to read, say you schor achelet, say you schor me'acherem, or schor me'elu, as the fulfillment of the terms of the contract.
Why can't it be that I'm a Balabais, I employ you, so you owe me labor, but you could replace your labor duty with someone else's.
But I'm not actually replacing anything.
You're saying
I have no right to the labor of any other Poel to designate that Poel.
But you're saying my friend is going to do the work in my stead. And I'll pay the difference between the quality of my work and his work. That's kind of that would be the inverse analogy. I hear what you're saying. It's more plausible to say that the Balabais
right.
could assign as part of like the duties that the... As part of the claim right that the Balabais has against the Poelim, he could say, instead of working in my kitchen, work in my neighbor's kitchen. Right? And you're saying that in the Poel case, it's less intuitive that the Poel could say, instead of me working, I'm my friend working.
Yeah,
I agree. But you see how you can make the inverse case work as well. Or you're not sure if you can see.
I'm still not sure.
You're skeptical.
Yeah.
Yoni?
What's interesting also, like, maybe part of the nachkamina, or it's like, this is like the extreme view within this camp of like explaining this contract theory, is whether or not this new employment that they now find, is that like subsumed within like the contract, the original contract, in some way that this is still like a fulfillment of that original contract.
Like what
like
they were...
like a shliach case a little bit.
Yeah, like who has the chiyuv to be yom titin scharo or something?
Yeah, and then like now this somehow becomes like just like another like, and then they still have the original contract. Just the only thing now is that they're
it's like
they're
it's ksuvasal baila, ksuvasal baila rishon or baila shnia.
Right, since there's like a renewal of the contract, which is trying to get held over, like
right.
we talked about, maybe like that would be like enough coming up for those.
Yeah, interesting. And then also, you know, in principle, how does the compensation work? Is it that the original Balabais is supposed to pay, just he sues to be compensated by Balabais Shani.
Right.
Or is there not like a direct agreement between the Baal HaBayis
Hashini
and
the more you think it's not just like the deacon, but like it's really contract being extended. Like you could talk about the contract being extended.
We're still under the first agreement.
Yeah.
And the idea is that there never really was a full breach.
Maybe there couldn't be a breach either.
Right, there isn't really a full breach. This is just a new way of satisfying, or like a secondary way of satisfying the original agreement. Yeah, that's really interesting. I have to, that would definitely solve the Gabe problem, right?
Yeah.
So the idea is that if there's contract, then why should there be a duty to mitigate or whatever? And the answer is no. Why should the ability to mitigate vitiate your claim for compensation? And the answer is because there's no breach in such a case. Right, what's really happening is like the satisfaction of the original terms.
Yeah, it's like a redefining of work.
Yeah, interesting. Eitan?
I just had a question. Let's say the contract has in it language explicitly stating you can't work for anyone.
That'd also be another nafkamina, right? If I go to the Powell says, like, it's only between me and you, it's never,
right.
It's not transferable, it's non assignable.
So can you reach that language?
Right, that might be a nafkamina. That might be a nafkamina, then we couldn't interpret it to sign it to a third party,
right,
if the original agreement had like clear language that prohibited that, 100%. As opposed to like all these taromas, you might say the taromas here is just for like the, you know, reassigning me to a third party. But if you have language that says you can't assign me to a third party, then it'll obviously be, it's more than just taromas, right?
And just one more quick follow-up. Could it be, is it possible to infer that every contract, I guess now it depends on how you define a contract, but every contract in it, like without having to explicitly state, is under the assumption that the owner has the ability to kind of place the worker wherever.
Yeah, that's what would follow from like the Yoni's idea.
Right.
Right. I think in this, in Halacha, you do get that sense. Right. If I'm hiring you Stam, then I really have wide latitude to determine what kind of labor you're going to do and for whom.
Right. That might lead into our discussion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I want to
Within the story also, I can make an explicit scenario in my contract that says, this is a no breaching contract as opposed to a breaching contract.
Well,
it's possible that
I'm going to talk about that. I think those kind of cases are really interesting.
Yeah.
I thought I had here a short discussion, which also might tie into this idea here, about who has the burden of proof. Anybody see that? I think it's a small comment from the Pisrei Choshen. Let's see if I could just pull that up for a second. Looks like it popped away from my source sheet here. Anybody see that, or?
What are you looking for?
Oh yeah. So I don't know, it got pushed down to page 10. Let's look on page 10 for a second. So you might ask, who has the burden of proof so I asked the question a second ago, does the Baal HaBayis have to tell the Poel to mitigate by working for somebody else, or is it automatic? And there's this discrepancy between the language of the Gemara and the language of the Shulchan Aruch. If you look around page 10, the Pisrei Choshen actually raises an interesting question. Everybody see the header, Al Mi Lehochiach Sheyachol LaHaskir Atam Makom Acher? So the Pisrei Choshen says, "B'chol makom shehuzkar kan im hayamoti listaker o shemoti ata listaker hadavar kasha livror." Right. So it's always going to be, they're always going to litigate, and it's going to be difficult to establish whether in fact he could have found alternative employment. And we svara nirash ala poel lohochiach kedin amoti mechavero. So it sounds like the duty is on the poel. I guess in which case? So he's talking about two different cases here, right? Yeah. So he's talking about a case, the counterfactual test, that yesterday when you hired me, I could have found alternative employment to show that I suffered a loss by relying on you, and the case that right now I can mitigate. He's talking about both of those cases. So he says, in every case, the burden of proof is going to be on the poel, because he's the motzi. He's trying to collect damages. And so the poel would have to show that he was not able to mitigate. So he has to kind of prove that, and only then is he entitled to collect. So what do you make of that argument? Yoni?
I see, like, that really falls under, like, like, it makes a lot more sense under, like, an Ezekiel and Garni view.
Yeah.
But then, like, really is a Mosi. But in one
sense, he's like, saying, like, you damaged me, and now he has to prove that he was
right.
damaged.
But the more you think it's like there is an actual contract that that exists, the more it's like a much more of a stretch to argue that Hamus Mechaber would really apply.
He's kind of just recouping what's his.
Yeah.
And then the Bala Bias is saying, well, how do I know that you're entitled to that much? Maybe you're entitled to less because you could have mitigated, right? But if anything, maybe the Bala Bias is the motzi by trying to say that you're entitled to less.
Yeah.
Right? So you might say, look, there's a breach. I'm entitled, you breached, you backed out, Bala Bias. I'm entitled to collect the rest of the contract. That we know Bavadai, right? That's mine. Now the Bala Bias wants to say, oh, but you could have been Mimait somehow. Right? So you might say the burden now shifts the Bala Bias to show that the Poel could have been Mimait. So I think Yoni's right that this really assumes this Nezikin paradigm. Now you might, now I would say let's distinguish between a pre-Kinyan and a post-Kinyan. Right? Pesach Hoshen doesn't do that. Notice here, because he says b'chol makom shehuzker kan, right? Meaning I'm not discriminating between pre and post. Anytime we're talking about a duty to mitigate and the counterfactual test, the burden of proof is going to be on the poel. Notice he also cites the Aruch HaShulchan, who says she'im bala bayis makhisho alav lihishava heses v'niftar. So if the bala bayis disputes the poel's claim about whether he could have mitigated, then the poel has to take a shvua. Mash mashim eno machish bevada eno nifter behesis. Right. So the implication is that I'm sorry. Shim bala bayis machisho olav li shava hesis v'niftar. Right. So the bala bayis would take a shvua and be exempt from paying. Mash mashim eno machisho bevada eno nifter behesis. Right. So that implies that the bala bayis doesn't dispute the Poel's claim, then the Poel is believed and the Bala Bias would have to pay. Do you guys see that in the what's going on there, Aruch HaShulchan?
Say it one more time.
Okay, Iker, you want to explain to him? Or?
Wait, why would you think
the Poel's
bias?
What? Yeah, Iker, you want to take a stab at it?
If the spot, like,
yeah, make him work.
I mean, Aruch HaShulchan says if the Bala Bias would be able to take a Shavuos Heses if he's contradicting the claim of the Poel. So for example, in our case, if the Poel is claiming that he had no ability to mitigate, the Bala Bias is machish. He just
yeah. So how do I know?
Sounds
like the Poel
like
is
the Poel is out.
Right. So the Aruch HaShulchan, the implication of the Aruch HaShulchan is that what the Poel says goes, unless the Bala Bias disputes it. Right. Which suggests that the Poel kind of has the upper hand here, at least when it's not contested. Right, Bala Bias says, I don't know anything about the markets, right? And the Poel says, I'm telling you, I went around and I checked, and there was no way for me to hire myself out. So Aruch HaShulchan says the Poel is believed. He doesn't have to establish it, right? It's not like your standard case of Nezikin. So maybe the Aruch HaShulchan is leaning more into some other theory. Either, as Yoni was saying, that if you go in for a contract view, then the rules of Motzi Mechaber Olav Arai are attenuated because we know the Poel has a claim right to compensation. Bala Bias breached, right? It's already, you know, you might say he's already entitled to that thing, which is the contract. And then the duties on the Bala Bias to prove otherwise. So that's one way that Aruch HaShulchan, you could explain the Aruch HaShulchan to you. The other way is just to say, remember when we studied Nezikin last year, it was a machlokes rishonim in a case where there's vadai nezek, and then one person wanted to argue that he's pater, because he wasn't poshea, right? Remember all the cases of Nezikin where you only chayev if there was some sort of negligence, right? So who had the burden of proof to establish that there was or was not negligence? That was machlokas achronim. So you might say, even if it's a Nezikin account, well, their vadai is nezek, right? The Bala Bayis vadai breached. And in a case of vadai breaching, then that's the burden of proof. Right? That's what you have to prove. And that has been proven here. The separate thing about mitigating, that's already like a p'tur in the nezikin. So I think you could even make sense of this machlokas within a pure nezikin framework. As we saw in the machlokas, in a case where there's vadai nezek, and the machlokas whether you're posheya, right, so we saw machlokas achron there, where does the motzei chaver lav araya fall? Okay. So I think this suffik of the Piskei Choshen is also helpful in clarifying exactly what the basis for mitigating is.
But
it's only when he's machish, as opposed to saying that.
It's only when he's machish. If he's not machish, then he's going to make a claim. Why would he not?
Then, of course, it's interesting. Motzei mechaber lav araya question. My understanding is that motzei mechaber lav araya means that I only can win if I can establish my claim.
Even if the other person doesn't say anything, he just says
exactly. So I bump into you on the road or something, and I mazik you, and you say you're mazik me, and I say I don't recall, I don't know, I don't know, kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's tricky. It gets into all these sugyas of enyodei bari v'shema, and then enyodei anis chayavti, enyodei praticha. Yeah. My understanding is that he's quoting the Aruch HaShulchan here as kind of as leaning the opposite way.
Right. Well, Misara this, the Aruch HaShulchan that.
Right.
You take a
Svara, I'll also pull up the Aruch HaShulchan, see if he has a better phrase to take a stand on it. Anybody else have a sense about which way the Aruch HaShulchan's leaning? Yakir, since you're here, we're going to use you for... What do you think, Yakir?
No, I agree with you. I was your mouthpiece earlier.
Right, that's true. Good. So we're on the same page. You agree even when you're not here, so you know. Glad that it carries through. Okay, let's go back to the Shulchan Aruch now. So that was those are all important points about trying to tease out the nature of this duty. So now remember the Shulchan Aruch quotes Yair was reading for us machlokas about what happens if the poel can only mitigate. With more strenuous labor, right? So Yair, bring us back to page 4. So right. So if the poel could find mishi askiram, ein lam zel ela taromas v'yesh omrim
dafilu lo matzah rak malacha kveda mizel rak shorotam lohosif bischaran tzarach asker atzman v'makom acher.
Yeah.
V'yesh cholken.
So 2 days in the Shulchan Aruch, whether you have a duty to mitigate, even if the labor is more strenuous. Right? Does the poel have the right of way to say, I signed up for normal work that I'm happy to do. Now you want me to do more strenuous work, even if the compensation for the strenuous work is fair, right? You're getting paid more for the strenuous work.
Can you explain that?
Well,
he's benefiting. That's like
the poel?
Yeah.
He's also working harder.
Maybe he does a little
right. It's not. It's not a net benefit, as they're pointing out.
Subjective thing.
That's right. I mean, I like to teach. You hired me to teach. Now you're telling me that I could
be a principal,
move books or whatever. Yeah, or I could be a computer programmer. I don't enjoy being a computer programmer.
Even if you're making more money.
Yeah, pay me all the money in the world.
Okay.
That's the 2 days in the Shulchan Aruch, right? About what. Does the duty to mitigate extend that far?
But the finish there is really just the subjectivity of Haifan. I feel like the subjectivity aspect is the finish there.
Do you think so? I mean, think about it this way. I signed up for one kind of work. The Balabais breaches. I'm only entitled to compensation if I mitigate my losses. How far, how strong is that duty?
Okay.
That's kind of the question here. Even to do things I didn't sign up to do? Right. So how do you guys conceptualize machlokas? What do you think is going on here? I do like this classroom better. Just kind of sitting around the table. Better
than this sounds a little annoying.
Sound is annoying, but otherwise I like it.
Is it missing a shade here? Is there no shade?
We really could just get a shade. There's nothing like a...
I'm sure we can get it.
Maybe it's the Cohen likes the...
Right.
Or Mamish. Right. Sorry, you can delete that from the...
That sounded good. Well, Ben, if you go to the edge of the table, you'll be out of the sun if you sit next to Eitan.
Yeah, there's like a lot of, like, potential food residue over here.
It's disgusting.
Disgusting.
So what do you guys think? How do you conceptualize?
So
I've got a short battery life.
What do you guys think?
I think within your, I'm reallocating the labor that I already bought theory, this isn't going to work, because I only bought a certain amount of labor and not a higher level of labor.
It's interesting. You're saying that I can't, if the agreement is kind of has one, there's one presumption for the agreement, we can't just say the Baal HaBayis is redistributing or reallocating the where the work goes.
Right.
If he's trying to move him. So that's a nice, it's a nice application of that earlier interpretation. Right, I think it's that might follow. It definitely plausibly follows from that. It's good.
In theory, like reach agreement, if it wasn't harder labor, but just being paid more, anything that's different might be a problem.
Right, but so who could kvetch about being paid more? You know,
I was in practice, they probably won't ever come up. So I'm saying, like, why would they ever complain paid more? But in theory,
right. Anytime the terms are really different.
Yeah.
Terms have to be like substantially similar or something. Yeah, what else do you think? So I guess on the contract theory, we're just going to say, is this really... can we read this in as an assumed term, right, in the original agreement, right, that if things go wrong in this agreement, then there's kind of a reserved right to have you do this other kind of work. So it'll be umdinas if we're trying to work within the contract theory. And what about within the nezek theory?
How much is a nezek to be paid more to do harder work?
Meaning, like, is it...
And then, like, you can make on an extra thing. It's not really necessary, right. Because now you're getting paid more, even though it's harder, but you're being fairly compensated. Or on the other hand, you could say no. Like,
so now the Poel's being harmed by...
Yeah, because the Poel said, like, I would rather do less work and be willing to take, like, the lower salary cut, but the less work is worth it for me.
I wonder if another way of putting that idea is just a base to frame this as who really has the right of way between the two parties. Similar to what the Motzei Mechaber Olav Araya question. So
yeah, it seems like the Poel.
Well, it's 2 days in the Shulchan Aruch.
According to the one who says that even if you're getting paid more money by working harder,
you don't have to.
You don't have to.
Right. Really seems like exactly. Poel, meaning is that
he's saying I'm controlling. You know, I don't want to work on Saturday nights. And I'll,
right. Exactly. So you might say that what's going on here, but this Machlokas tests how. Strong the duty to mitigate is, or even what its conceptual basis is. So if the idea is that the Poel is not entitled to any compensation until he has damages, right, then and you think that whether he has damages, whether it's a Dabar HaAvud, really depends on what other employment he could find right now, and the Baal HaBayis might have the right of way. Meaning, the Baal HaBayis is saying, you Poel are trying to argue that you're suffering a Dabar HaAvud, show me that you don't have available alternatives. And the Poel can't be stuffy in arguing that that's not a viable alternative for me because I don't like to do that. If, however, you think the Poel here really did suffer a loss. He's entitled to compensation. The Baal HaBayis breached. But there's some other principle that says that we're not going to entitle him to collect the full amount if he could recover it, to figure out exactly what that principle might be. maybe similar to the principle of the Baal HaBayis has the right to assign him to satisfy the contract elsewhere, then in principle it sounds like the Poel has the right of way. Right? There was a breach, the Baal HaBayis backed out. The Poel's entitled to compensation. Right? We don't necessarily require damages. The Baal HaBayis wants to argue that he's still entitled to satisfy the agreement through directing the Poel elsewhere. Well, it's got to be within reasonable terms for the Poel that are similar to the prior agreement. So I think that this way of looking at it views this machlokes in terms of the nature of the duty to mitigate. Is a duty to mitigate a way of saying that the basis is nezek, and when you can mitigate, there's no nezek? Or is the idea the different view that, no, the moment there's a breach, you're entitled to be compensated? Maybe the Baal HaBayis has an argument to say that, you know, there wasn't fully a breach here because you could satisfy this, I'm allowing you to satisfy the contract through this other employer. Something along those lines.
How does this be different from the other option, which would be the other option of work is less work for less pay?
Yeah. So less work for less pay, that's the next line of the Shulchan Aruch. Emeina motzim lios niskar mel bepachos mishalim lamapechas. Then, of course, the Baal HaBayis is going to have to make up the difference to the Poalim.
Right?
So if they're going to get paid less, they have to mitigate whatever they can mitigate, and the Baal HaBayis is responsible for the delta. That's not disputed. Yeah, you're...
If you're right about the Shulchan Aruch, I would have loved to see a formulation that refers to the desire of the Poel. That's not what we refer to here, right? We don't talk about what the Poel wants or doesn't want. You know, it's preferences about the work that's available. It'd be great if it was, you know, the Poel has the right to say, I'm not interested in this work.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm seeing here.
Interesting. Look at the Pischei Choshen here, what he says. I wonder if this helps you. I mean, helps me satisfy your concern.
I'm being helped. I'll take it.
Yeah. Just look at the last Pischei. Why, you going to that party? Party.
You're leaving here to go to a party.
Right.
I'll be here on Thursday.
Great.
Because you know.
Perfect. Okay. Look
see
at
you
the.
Later.
See ya, Ben. You could grab the head of the table now. Get out of the sun.
It's true.
So look at the Pischei Choshen on the bottom, and then sorry, the first Pischei Choshen on page 5, citing the Chaz Nishim Bava Kama Simon Chav Gimel. Yoni, you want to read that for us?
Where are we?
Okay. Page 5. That's that first new Pischei Choshen.
Because of Chazanish, the Dafka Melav Kal Shidar Kolavod, the Dav Shidar Kolavod, Vada Shin Yachol Lomalo has Kiran Zacha, the Gamasina Ayu Shidar Kolavod, the Gamasuka Zeb, the Shush Tamil Yarash, the Arab Melav Machin Dark of the Kacho, please.
Yeah, so the Chazanish wants to say that, even the view that says the Poel has to take a more strenuous job for higher pay, that's only if it's Dvarim that's Darko Malach, Darkosh, it's Bimalacha Shidarko Lavod. Right? So, the Baal HaBayis does not have the right of way to tell the Poel to mitigate in something that the Poel is not usually going to do. It's only within the normal work of the Poel. See that?
Like that chacham in the other
Pentecostian
about the
Talmud Torah. Right.
Disagree.
It could be a... That's right. Depends if Talmud Torah is everyone's malacha or something.
Yeah.
But here, does this settle your concern at all? Because, right, he is saying that it's got to fall within the normal preference set of the Poel.
Right. If the Pentecostian is right.
The Chaznisha, really.
Oh, no, because he... It seems to me, maybe I'm missing something. I don't know. The formulation of the Efshar Shachmida Rashba Ayrid Malachash in Darko Bakachul Pligi.
Meaning he wants to say there's no machlokas at all, even.
Right. That's perfectly plausible, and that addresses my concern, and that makes your reading work. Right? Because really the question is just, you know, what.
Yeah.
You know, it assumes that we fall on the side of the Poel, and then the question is what does the Poel normally do and normally not do? I'm just not enamored with readings of Masloko that say there's really no Masloka because
right,
there are unspoken assumptions that
correct.
Neither of them mention.
No, I agree on the second. I agree on the second half. Right, I agree on the second half.
Right.
I think we could still preserve
right.
that there is a Masloka between those two deos.
Right. You only maintain the first part of the Chazanish, and you limit sort of range of the,
exactly.
The position of the Mordechai.
So the idea is that, like, you know, I like to teach 2 hours a day. But now this other job is going to make me teach 6 hours a day at higher pay. Right? That's the way of under... The machlokas is in that kind of a case.
Right.
And then that's, the point is just even within the range of normal preferences, who has the upper hand, Bala Bayis or the Poel?
Or I could say, no, you know, the Chazon Ish proves that we're clearly within the normal range of preferences of the Poel. The Poel can't meaningfully claim, I wouldn't take this work. This is his work. Of course he would take it. Right? And then there's some other machlokas going on.
Well, I would say that, except that it's more severe, right? It's more intense, and he isn't less.
Yeah, but it's his job. If he didn't get that job, he would have taken this job. He wouldn't have taken a job as a contractor or a plumber, because
right.
He doesn't do that.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Now, Yakir had a very good point here. Second. Yes, yeah, here, tell us your diag in the Shulchan Aruch here.
Diag is that he brings in this machlokas only within.
Where's everyone going? Was it like?
I'm just using the restroom. So, I'm just afraid of waiting while you're back. Or you
Kiddush Club going on here or something? It's the. That's.
All
right. Okay, here, go on. So tell us your diag in the Shulchan Aruch.
He brings in this machlokas that Moch Kmita. Only within the case where there was Haskalas of Malacha already. He doesn't bring it in the first time this case comes up, which is in the case of where there's no Haskalas of Malacha yet.
Yes, you see that? The Shulchan Aruch only cites this. I was wondering about this as well. Shulchan Aruch only cites the case. He only cites the Machlokas about... are there damages when the Poel could have done Melacha Kveda in the post-Kinyan case? Right, so mitigating after there already is a Kinyan Haskalas Melacha. Why doesn't he cite this in the pre-Kinyan case as well, right? There's Machlokas Rishonim about whether you have to mitigate from Melacha Kveda to a Melacha Kveda before you have a Kinyan. So it's interesting Ha'ara. Now, Shulchan Aruch itself is a bit of a mess. It's always hard to know, you know, what belongs where. And
what do you mean by that? Shulchan Aruch is a bit of a mess.
You know, you get these insertions of the Rama in the middle.
The reason I mention it is just a horror that Simon made. We really helped available this past summer. He quoted some achro, Dvarsh Mol or something. I don't know, some achro, saying the Shulchan Aruch was like written by multiple students of the Beit Yosef, and so you have a steer on the Shulchan Aruch. You don't have to be so worried about it.
Right.
Which I never heard that before. I have no idea how the Shulchan Aruch was written, but I was curious if you were like alluding to such a thing.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
Yeah, it was a little mischievous for Simon, but.
Right. No, I think it's, I mean, even if it was just the Beis Yosef, you know, it's still a mess. You know, it's kind of.
Right. Yeah, and the substantive point of the deal, it just, you know, he had to put those two clauses in some order, and.
Yeah.
You know, it's perfectly plausible to me. He means it to apply to the entire deal and not.
Right. He's saying a steer in Shulchan Aruch is like a steer in Tosos.
Yeah, that's what Simon was trying to allude to. There's a steer about, you know, Avelos on Purim, or...
Right. I think there's more of a meta issue about the Shulchan Aruch. I mean, it's not... If you think that you're paskening Rov, so Rov in one sugya might be inconsistent with Rov in a different sugya.
Right? No,
and
that,
you just,
that,
you
that
just
can't
take,
be.
You just take Rov in each sugya.
Yeah, can't be
right?
Shulchan Aruch.
Well...
You're misunderstanding some sugya if Rov contradicts each other. Otherwise,
but the point is that we're not trying to get to the... Meaning, what matters is not like the consistent understanding of all sugyas. What matters that you're trying to get to the Havana of Rov Rishonim in each discrete sugya. And so that the method of... That method of paskening could lead to cross-sugya inconsistency. But that's fine if you think that we're supposed to pasken Kfi Rov in each individual sugya. So I think it's fine to even say that you could have stiras without getting into this thing about the multiple talmidim.
Or you have minhag.
Well,
minhag is itself a factor which makes stiras.
Right.
Minhag is conceptually inconsistent.
Right. Or I'm just saying rov is similar to minhag. Right. That's like kind of a side issue here.
No, they don't like that. It's not a minhag if it's not conceptual.
Yeah, so
it's a side hara. I wasn't sure if you were alluding to something that
No, I think it's a bit of also just the way the Shulchan Aruch Sama formulated with the layers and the formulations aren't so clear as to what exactly certain modifications, what modifiers are referring back to. So here also the Shulchan Aruch, definitely the point about that these two deos is only brought in the post Kenyan scenario. So Yakir, why do you think that's important?
Well, so it's important because of what we've been developing, that that what you say about Machla HaKavita will depend on how you, will depend on the nature of the duty to mitigate, and the possibility that on a Ramban-type view, the nature of the duty to mitigate will be different pre-Kinyan and post-Kinyan.
Yeah. In which case, it might follow that the Shulchan Aruch here is Meduyak, that this Machlogas would not apply in the pre-Kinyan case.
Right.
Right? Meaning,
what?
Yeah, so flesh it out for us.
In the case, everyone would agree that the duty to mitigate is based in Nezek, and therefore the Poel has less of a right to say that less of a right to refuse alternative employment.
Right. I mean, I think we all agree that in a pre-Kinyan case, the Poel has a weaker stand. He has a weaker standing. Right, he's trying to claim something in Nezikin here, right? He's a real motzi, and the balabayis is the one who's saying, you know, show that I damaged you. In which case, the poel is going to have a greater duty to mitigate if he wants to collect damages, right? Whereas post-Kinyan, like, no, the balabayis is withholding something that belongs to the poel. Right, the contract is already the Poel's, and the Baal Bias is refusing to pay it out. So then you might say the Poel has more of an upper hand post-Kinyan. I think Yakir's Diakir is very sharp to say that it's Meduyak in the Shulchan Aruch that the Machlokas only applies post-Kinyan, because maybe pre-Kinyan, everybody would agree to that first day of the Mordechai that the Poel's got to mitigate even in cases where he doesn't want to, even in cases where it's Malcha Kveda, correct? Yeah, I think that's a very nice observation. Good. Notice, turn to the Mordechai in Simon Shin Mem Beis. This is the Mordechai in our Sugya. Yoni, why don't you read it for us? This is page 4, right in the middle.
Because we're being a mayor, Hadid Parishicha de Mosa, Pondi Shtaker, Engel Lava Taromet, Nero Ishin, Achalek, Menhitzkub Malacha, Lelowitzkil.
So the first point here is say that he thinks there is no distinction in terms of the duty to mitigate between pre and post Kinyan. This is the Maran Lashitaso who doesn't really view Aschalas Amalacha as a Kinyan. Right, it's not, I mean, the Bali Tosis in general, they don't see Aschalas Amalacha as significant. It's all just an umduna about whether he could find alternative employment. Right, so consistent with that, he's going to say the duty to mitigate is the same across. Right, the Ramban being Medayik and Rashi thought, and our reading the inference from Rashi seemed to say that maybe the duty to mitigate would not apply post Kinyan. At least that's an inference from Rashi. Go on. So notice the important shift in language here. So even if you're hischil b'malacha, the poel, the balabayis, can be chozer, yachal balabayis lachzerbo, hecha de poel motzi l'staker. So long as the poel can find alternative employment, it's permissible for the balabayis to back out. So what shift happened, Ben?
What do you mean, what shift?
In the formulation, so far we've been talking about what kind of chi of nezikin is there. And what's the Mordechai talking about?
The, you know, I guess the duty or lack thereof of the Balabai.
The no duty. That's right. Meaning the liberty. Remember Hofeld.
Liberty. That's the term. I was stuck. I couldn't think of it.
Right, so
I was going to say right, and that's
right.
The term.
That's right. Remember, so there are two separate issues here. One of them is about the claim of that the Poel has for compensation, right? And we're saying, well, maybe that doesn't exist when you could fully mitigate. That's what the Shulchan Aruch was talking about. That seemed to be what all the other Rishonim were talking about. Notice the subtle shift in the Mordechai to go to the much more radical claim that it's perfectly permissible for the balabais to back out if the poel can find alternative employment. You might think they're two separate issues. For the other rishonim, of course, it's impermissible. You have a duty, you have a Feldian duty not to breach. But if you do breach, there are no damages if the poel can mitigate. Here, the Mordechai citing the Maharam is making the stronger point that the balabais has the liberty to back out. It's perfectly permissible for him to do so. He's under no duty to not back out, so long as the poel can find alternative employment. It's a big difference. So here he's really elevating the moral status of the ability to mitigate to something much higher. Right? So it's like if nothing happened, there was no wrongdoing. Right? Well, there's some taromes because now he's got to deal with a different employer. Has to got taromes because of shinoi data. But it's not problematic for you to do so. So it sounds like he thinks that, you know, the iser maybe is to be mazik, and there just is no nezek if the poel is able to find employment elsewhere. And I think this really tones down like the significance of the kind of binding agreement between the parties.
Yoni. Is there also a huge tradition taromet? He still has taromet, doesn't he?
He says there is taromes.
Yeah, so it's a huge chiddush that he has like the power to make a deal.
There's a liberty to...
Or a liberty, even though he still has now.
Right, you might think that taromes shows you that eino yachal lachzor, right?
It seems like l'chatchila.
Well?
Like, from the outset.
Yeah.
Taromes will tell us you can't...
Yeah,
right, taromes shows that there's some real wrong. So maybe the Mordechai's reading of Taromes is that it's just, it's a little annoying for him, but Taromes itself doesn't impose a duty to not breach.
You're like a moral duty?
Right. This might be a very, maybe you're right here to point out that this assumes a very weak interpretation of what Taromes is. You guys agree with that?
Are you assuming that Yachal Lachzor implies permissibility and not just Ophelian power or something like that?
Yeah. And you're saying Yachal Lachzor here would just mean... I guess, because Yachal Lachzor would otherwise... How would you interpret it? That otherwise he's not able to back out at all?
Back out without the expectation that he'll have to pay.
That's all it means.
But not like
you want to say. Yochel Ba'is Lachsabo means that penalty without.
Correct. But not without moral
wrongdoing. So it would still be impermissible.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess the word, the Hebrew word Yochel, is ambiguous, right?
Right, the same way. Right, we had this same issue last time, right? You can't be Hosea.
Yeah.
Able to be, or?
Right. Yeah. So why am I inclined to read?
Well, not really. Reading because it's like what's his chiddush and what's he saying? Of course, you can be chosen. Right.
Without,
right.
Without,
well,
it's horses.
Right.
The chiddush is that it's only a tarmas as opposed to
claim right for damages or something.
But right. You just said that in the beginning, and I guess not. I guess yeah. Okay.
So if this a malach ashkan diyachol balavayis lachzer,
even if he's kol malach.
Right, that's what he wants to say. But the question is, look, I don't think he wants to say that Eino Yochel Lachzor. The word Eino Yochel Lachzor would mean that he couldn't back out. Right? I guess you'd have to throw in the clause without.
Is that what it, or could it mean? He couldn't back out without the expectation of.
Without damages. Right. So, unless you. Let's put it this way. I'm comfortable reading Yochel Ba'avayis Lachzor in terms of the. Duty, right? So, or Yakir put it as a power to back out without paying damages, right? That's one way of reading it. Problem is that he doesn't say anything about damages here, right? So you actually have to read that phrase in Yakir on your view. But absent an explicit mention of damages, I would say yachal is about whether it's halachically permissible. And the discussion here is never really about damages. The question is whether it's you have a liberty to do so. Do you have a duty to not do so? But I agree. Maybe it's my reading is not as strong as I initially thought. But what's motivating my reading is the fact that he doesn't even mention damages. So I take it to be that he's just interested in the question of permissibility. See that? That's my reading. You'll see there's a similar formulation. I can make the same point out of the tour, which we'll get to in a moment.
The formulation
was Rashi.
It's just be other, yeah.
Yeah.
Seems
much better formulation, much more precise.
If you're putting
it, yeah, I agree with that.
If you're seeing it as like permissibility, then yeah, that's
the Rashus is better.
Then why would there even be a taromet?
Right, that would be the chiddush then, that the taromes is just a result that the guy ended up, you know, having to deal with a different employer. It's a nuisance, but the nuisance doesn't impose a duty to forbear from saddling the employee with the nuisance. It's a chiddush in taromes. That taromes is so not a big deal.
Are you not getting into a little bit complicated territory of like moral responsibility and like? Can you, if it's going to cause a nuisance to someone...
Right, and then, but this Mordechai would then be saying that, yes, it's permissible for you to...
You're doing something, like, that's annoying for someone, but you shouldn't feel any sort of, like...
That's right, there's no...
Guilt.
That's right, there's no moral compunction with you subjecting him to dealing with a different employer. It's just business, that's how business works. That's what would follow from my read of the Mordechai.
Right.
The advantage of Yakira's reading is that you don't get stuck with that. Right, so if there's taromes, then clearly it's impermissible. A lot of this just turns on what's the category of taromes. If taromes is just like a nuisance, then I think my reading's okay. If taromes reflects the halachic wrongdoing, then I think Yakira's reading would be better.
Right.
Yeah? Is that a good way of putting it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think your reading What opinion is the Mordechai trying to reject? I think within your reading, the Mordechai is trying to reject an opinion that you would lack the legal power to break the agreement, which is fine. It's just a little bit, you know, you have to imagine that's like, you know, a kind of havamina that he wants to reject.
Either that or just that you're paying compensation. And the Mordechai is making a trivial point.
Okay.
The Mordechai is way more trivial on your view. Right? Okay, let me just point out the other Mordechai in Simen Shin Mem Vav. Let's just mention gotta mention this great Pesachei Choshen. And the footnote here, I love this.
Every Pesachei Choshen is great.
Well, only the ones that I pull out here.
That's true.
Gotta sort through a lot to get to the good stuff. But I think in this sugya, he's actually fantastic.
We need to bring Avram back to counter.
That's right. Yeah, Avram is just kind of. Pesachei Choshen is great. I mean, where else do you get these great stories? Shemati b'shem echad me'agdolim. Right? So let's hear. What? I don't know. I think he was on the bezin of the Eda Charedis. So, you know. Yeah, okay, read us. Tell us about the Shemati B'Shem Echad Me'agdolim.
So the Shemati B'Shem Echad Me'agdolim. Shesachar Paolim Yisayid L'Shalim K'Pol Batel. Amar Lahem Rishi.
So notice this Gadol, whoever he was, must have breached, right? Because usually that's when you're chayiv to. That's why he doesn't want to tell us his name.
He doesn't look very wealthy enough.
So he hires Paul and
he breaches.
Right, so he says, you got to mitigate, right? So.
Mitigate by learning.
I tell you, mitigate because I'll pay you to sit and learn in my base medrash. Shalom Nisratzu. Yeah, it's great. So he's like, you don't want to mitigate, right? You guys aren't willing to sit and learn in Kolo. It's really interesting. This kind of depends on the Chazanish point, right? Because the Chazanish was saying you could only make them, you know, do what they're used to doing, right? You can only have them mitigate to similar kinds of melacha. So I don't know what he was hiring them initially for. Like, are these guys who usually sit in Kolo? Right, if not, then it's intention.
It's like a subtle Kira move.
Right. You hire them, you breach, and you say, you want to get paid? You got to sit in. Gotta sit and learn.
Yeah. Gotta come to a Friday night Chabad dinner.
Yes, look what he says. Ve'en lemeidim halachos mimaisios.
Aval nir v'shem ino mi'chol elu mon reizek malacha kibeida.
Right, it's good stuff. So, I mean, there's another interesting point here that he says if they're not able to learn, then it's kemelacha kveda. He shouldn't have said that. I think he should have said then it's like the Chazon Ish, where so melacha kveda is 2 days in Shulchan Aruch, right? To do like, but the Chazon Ish's point is that if it's outside of your normal range of work, then you have no duty. Everyone would agree you have no chiyuv to do it. Right. Sounds like he wants to say that this is still within the 2 days in Shulchan Aruch. But then he says, "Oh, michol lag until the mistaver shiachal amam shiasu kein." Just kind of interesting note on the story. Okay, now the other Mordechai in Simon Shimon Vav. Also, this is the Mordechai that has the view that melacha kveda, you have a duty to mitigate to melacha kveda. So let's see this Mordechai Shimon Vav. So just the background here is Balabayas hires Melamed to teach his child gets sick, and he says, you know, yes, my child was really smart and a pleasure for you to teach, my child's sick, why don't you teach the neighbor's child in the interim, and that's how you'll make your salary, right? But the Nar Hasheni wasn't as charif as the Nar Arishon, so it's like Melacha Kveda, blah blah blah. So the Mordechai says, "Imrota lahosif al schar lefim asham lachta shnia kvedim in rishona harshus biyad balabayis lachzor bo." So everybody see that? Look at that phrase in the bottom.
Could you scroll down a little bit on the
here?
I'm on your thing.
Can you see it now or?
Yeah.
So everybody see the phrase? So he says that Yakir, I think this phrase in the Mordechai is a little better because you have Harishus.
Yeah. Agreed.
Looking at the first line of the Mordechai, Haiman de Agir Agiri La Virita Vishilam Avata Pagodioma. So the guy finishes in the middle of the day. Chena din balabayas omer tilmodli nar acher bim komo ache yisrape bini Harishus biyado. Right, so that you have permission to tell him to finish the work elsewhere, right? And then again, he says Harishus biyad balabayas lachzerbo. So here, I think the formulation of the Mordechai actually is kind of more similar to my reading of that earlier Mordechai. This one is Shin Mem Vav, the other one is Shin Mem Beis. But it sounds like yes, if you could assign him. You could point him to comparable work, and it's perfectly permissible for you to do so. You're under no duty not to. Notice also, it even sounds like Yoni's theory here, that it's the Balabayas is designating how the contract should be satisfied, as opposed to a clear breach with a mitigation. Doesn't the language suggest that? It's like the contract hasn't really been breached because he's pointing you to satisfy it with the neighbor. I agree. The language of lachzer bo is a little in tension with that.
You read my face.
Right, that's all right. All right. I did do a good job reading your face, right? Because lachzer bo implies that you're backing out of the agreement.
Right.
Right. So there is kind of a tension here. He's saying, Arishus biyado lachzer. So he calls it lachzer, but then he says, Arishus biyado. And his description of the facts seems to say that you're just reassigning the labor to the other child as opposed to child one.
I mean, it doesn't sound like I'm making a taina that you could work for the other guy if you wanted to.
Right, it just sounds like okay, let's go weiter. Instead of people A, it's going to be people B. Right? What do you guys think?
We're singing in your father's
year. Yeah. Last Litvox left in YU. Right here, you know? Okay, let's... So, but I think the... you know, those 2 points do go hand in hand, right? The point that you're under no duty not to, right? So it's Rishis Biyad Al-Achzor, and it's not a serious chazara in his mind, Right? It's not like there's a real breach going on here because, you know, you're kind of just carrying out the same the same thing. So maybe the 2 points of Rishus V'yado and the point about the description of the facts, which is the continuation of the original agreement, go hand in hand, at least in the Mordechai's mind. It's an open question what's going to happen in a more egregious case where there's like a clear, what looks to us like a clear breach, right? And then you're trying to, he was doing work of type X, and then you're trying to say, oh, I'm breaching this agreement, now I want you to do a different kind of work altogether.
Right, Mordechai's pretty,
it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
But notice this Mordechai is the source for that psak in the Shulchan Aruch, which reads, Yesh omer medafilu lamatza rak malacha kveda mizu, rak shirotzen lahosif bischaran, tzrichen lahaskir atman makam acher. That duty to mitigate, even when it's like more laborious work, comes from this Mordechai. But the Mordechai's language itself sounds much more benign than the language that's Paskin and Shulchan Aruch. Okay, let me make one more observation in this sugya, and then we'll stop before we get into the question of damage. So we'll cap it today with all these with the mitigation discussion, with closing up the mitigation discussion. So look at the language of the Tur in Siman Shin Lamed Gimel. Yoni, why don't you read the language of the Tur?
So for the poel, a the man should bow lachzor or poel of alabayit. Or it should be other, she yachol balabayit, omer the poel, has care of machaf makom acher, vegam a poel, omer the balabayit, say his chor, machaf poel acher.
Yeah. So notice, Elishiyesh alachozer taromas b'shvil ha-torach. Notice, here the language in the Tur, similar to what I was observing in the Mordechai, is the language of permission, right? Each party has a full liberty to back out. They're under no duty to not back out, in Hofeld's terms. Now this is, of course, Kodem Kenyan, right? You can see the next phrase in the Tur, the next part, Miu kazirinatam, imashak balabayis kleyomino, shosn bamlach, nigmar kenyan aschiros, etc., etc. We have to look up that Rabbeinu Tam. But notice this is also fully conditioned on the ability to mitigate. She yachal balabayis lomar lapoel hasker asmacha b'makom acher. See that? So the idea is that if I could just tell you to get the same compensation somewhere else, then it's perfectly permissible for me to back out, even though there's taromas. Look at the sma. Shalom again, we'll... Aleph. Yoni?
Okay.
Yeah, so there's not even an issue of Mechusar Amana. So Mechusar Amana is the din that comes up in Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Reish Daled, about... if you tell somebody you're going to sell an item to them, you're going to sell your property to them, it's wrong for you to back out once you made that commitment. Right, so the general thing about backing out of a deal is it has this idea of Mechus Ramana, maybe a Mechus Ramana's Pasal Eidos. We could talk more about that. But it's a clear moral violation, a clear wrong to back out of a deal once you agree to go through with it, even Kodem Kenyan. Now, the Sma's observation here is that the language of Harshus B'yado, this idea that you have a perfect liberty to back out, suggests that there's no moral violation whatsoever in backing out Kodem Kenyan. De les be'afilu mishum mechusrei amana. Right? And look what he, now he says...
But there's still taromas.
Yes, there's still taromas, exactly.
Yeah.
Right? Now he does say, which is interesting... So again, I think that speaks to that stronger idea of a duty to mitigate, that it's as if there's no breach whatsoever. That's the only way to explain the perfect liberty. And you have to downplay the significance of taromas on this view.
Right.
But notice the Sma does say very interestingly that disvirale de lo amrukein elakishachozer midvara bidavar she'en bo toeles. He thinks the reason why there's no Mechusar Amana is because there's only Mechusar Amana if you back out for no reason. And he quotes a Chmosha Kasav HaTur and the Ramah later on in Siman Reish Dalet. Dichishenishtane hashar lesbe mishum mechus ramanas. 2 days in the Shulchan Aruch, if you back out of an agreement because the prices change, so I tell Ben I'm going to sell him my house, and then before we close on the deal, the prices fluctuate. So now I want to back out. There are 2 days in the Shulchan Aruch whether I get mechus ramana for that. Is mechus ramana only when it's gratuitous, or even when there's good reason to back out based off market conditions? So he says, v'hachanami, if you hold that, this language of the tour, like this language of the tour, they have a perfect liberty to back out here, it's only because you hold this general view that there's no mechusar amana when you have reason to back out, either eino tzarech lahem, or you find cheaper workers. And then he says, according to this, that other view in the Shulchan Aruch and Reish Dalet that holds there is mechusar amana for backing out even when the market prices fluctuate, then you would disagree with this psak of the tour here and hold eino rashai, ein lo rishus lachzor. See that? And then he says, oh, and on that view you can make sense, on that view you can explain why there's ein lahem ela taromes rotz lomar lafuke tvias mamon vami mechutzar amana gam kein ninhu. So notice, he's saying there are two ways of reading the Taromes line. If you hold that there's Mechusar Amana here, then you're basically going to say that, oh, the Taromes reflects that there's a moral violation like Mechusar Amana. If you say there's no Mechusar Amana here, then you're going to read the Taromes line as saying, yeah, there's that reflects that all there is a grievance and nothing more substantial than that. All right. Is that good? Is that a helpful overview of the duty to mitigate discussion? Okay, so we'll stop here. What I want to pick up with on Thursday is the background assumption here, according to Tosfos, throughout the sugya, that if you deprive the poalim of an alternative employment opportunity, you're chayv in nezek. And even the Ramban, who thinks that post-Kinyan it's contract, the Ramban seems to concede that pre-Kinyan there is Nezek liability. So see, a lot of Achronim here get upset that this doesn't seem to comport with the rules of Dina Degarmi. It's too much like Grumma. It's not immediate enough to constitute Garmi even. And so there's no easy way of straightforwardly applying the rules of Nezikin to explain why there's liability in this case. That's the claim of the Ksos and the Nesivis. And so I want to figure out, A, is that true? And B, if it is true, what's the grounds for liability? Why does the Gemara seem to say that you're a chayiv? Could it be just like a version of Nezek, or could there be non-Nezek grounds for characterizing the liability here? And after these, maybe Dover HaAvod is a different category, maybe this idea of Arev is a different category of Mechayiv. So I want to tease that out and then contrast the Nezek view with the contract view of the other Ramban of the Shulchan Aruch. All right? All right, Shkach, very good.
5 o'clock.